The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I'm so excited for today's episode with Dr. Patrick McGrath from NoCD. This is a long-awaited episode where we finally talk about things. Mom, hello, I'm recording my podcast where we talk about things like relationship OCD and OCD in general. As you can hear, my mom is here hanging out with Zachary behind me, but you know, she needs to be told that we're recording. I am so excited to get into your questions. A lot of really good ones came in. We're only going to probably have time for two or three, so I'm going to get right into them.
I've been dating a guy for a while now, and we aren't official or anything, but we just started talking about our values and more deeper conversations, and political views came up, and we have very different views, and everything else about him is great. I really like him. But this might be a deal breaker. I just don't know if it's something I should make a deal breaker or if it's something that can be looked over if everything else aligns with what I want in life. It's very frustrating. This keeps happening. I feel like I need to start asking this question on the first date. Who did you vote for and who will you be voting for? Just curious if anyone else is dealing with this or has dealt with this, or if it can work. You just, you know, don't talk about political views, but I feel like that's pretty tough to do if you start seriously dating someone, especially in the world we live in now. But I don't know.
Okay. So my thoughts on this is it really depends on, I just feel like we're living in this different time where your political views might represent more of who you are as a person than what you just feel politically. Like there's been a shift. And if you vote for a certain person, let's say today, you know, I'm going to let you use your imagination there. It might say more about you than if you vote for another person or if you just like that party. So like if you're a general Republican versus like you voting for someone who is an actually bad person, you know, that's different. But as long as you can separate it from who you are as a person, I would say that you could work it out with this guy. But if you go into depth on that conversation with this person you're seeing and you're like, you know, what values of this political candidate do you align with? You know, like ask the hard questions. And if you're getting answers that really disturb you or make you upset to hear, then that's probably a larger red flag. Because I do think that when you date someone, you start to become each other, like you really rub off on the other person. And if you feel like their values and what they believe is not aligned with what you believe, then that's a big difference. And that's a difference in values. And when you raise kids, like it's not imperative, but it's important to be aligned on what you, you know, teach them and what you learn collectively. And if your partner is telling them one thing and you're telling them another thing, it's not really a united front. So I would say that it's probably more important nowadays. And you shouldn't be asking who you vote for. I know you're joking on the first date, but like, you should have an idea of that before you are official with someone. And I'm sorry this keeps happening to you. It is really annoying, but it's a good way to weed out people who are not for you. All right, playing another.
Is it normal or red flag for couples to be following each other's locations at all time?
I find this to be the biggest red flag ever. Steven and I don't have each other's locations. It's on a need to have basis. Like, for example, if I'm walking home and I feel uncomfortable, I'll send him my location for an hour to make sure that, God forbid, nothing happens. Or, you know, if there's a situation where we need to share it, we will share it. And I'm someone who has all of my friends' locations. So it's not like, yeah, so I have my friends' locations, but I don't feel the need to have my partner's location because I feel like I already know where he is most of the time, probably 90% of the time. It's nice to have that 10% of mystery, right? Like, I don't need to know that he went out for lunch at work. He'll tell me or send a picture of his food. I just feel like when you have your partner's location, it's very different from having your parents, having your siblings, having your friends. It's more tempting to kind of look when there's no need to, right? Like, if you are in a trusting, good relationship, you don't need to have your partner's location. Like, I will die on this hill. I just don't think that there's a reason for it. If it's a safety concern, then again, you can send it on a need to know basis. But I think couples who know everything about their partner, where they are at all times, or they're tracking them, it's kind of red flaggy, you know? It's like, it's one thing if you have their location and you literally never look at it and you know that you're someone that never looks at it and you know that your partner never looks at it. But that's kind of rare because if you had the opportunity to, I feel like you would at least peek every so often. So I would say you don't need to share locations with your partner. I think it is kind of a red flag when you do. Okay, next one.
Hey, curious your thoughts generally on when the woman has the higher libido in a couple. I've been with my boyfriend for 3 years. We live together. And every time we have sex, it's great. So fun. We try new things. It can be hot and heavy, or it can be, you know, more calm, casual. But I find that we kind of have been doing it once a week. I have the higher sex drive, and he had been frustrated with me pressuring him to so often that we decided that he was going to be the one to initiate solely. But now I'm just sitting here, like, annoyed and wishing that he would initiate more. And I definitely give subtle hints, but outside of directly initiating, which I know he doesn't want because he feels like it adds more pressure. Not really sure where to go from here. So I don't know whether you think that's a more direct conversation or, you know, boys are so simple, trying to trick them into little things to make it happen more. But I don't know, it's hard being the girl with the higher libido.
I hear you, girl. I feel like I can definitely relate to that. And I do like the idea of him being the one to initiate it more because it just, first of all, it feels better. I feel like I had this conversation with a therapist a few years ago and the therapist said similar advice. She was like, just, you know, let him initiate more. It's annoying, right? Because it's like for women, we don't really have to, like, quote unquote, perform in the same way that men do. So we can just, you know, kind of like have it if we want to have it. Whereas for them, it's like more mental. They have to do this sort of, you know, get there. And it's frustrating. But I will say, if you're having it once a week and you've been together for 3 years, like, that's not nothing. So I wouldn't totally discredit it. And if when you do have it, it's really good and you're enjoying it, I would try to focus on that. It's so annoying. I feel like we don't talk about enough how women oftentimes have a higher libido and a higher sex drive than men. It's always marketed and, like, in movies as if it's the other way, but it's not always. And it's annoying. It can be frustrating. I think that once you're deep into a long-term relationship with a man, their sex drive definitely changes a little bit. And maybe that's for lack of, like, newness, you know? And so maybe there is some trickery that can be done. Maybe it's like an outfit, maybe it's this or that, but it is, like, annoying because it's like, why do I have to do this for my partner to want to have sex with me? Like, they should want to already. But of course, I don't know how old you guys are, but there's things, like, there's stressors, there's things that happen. And when a man, I feel like, doesn't have X, Y, and Z in order, it can affect their sex drive. I would definitely have more of a conversation. Also, like, is he taking care of himself? Is he going to the gym? I know that increases a man's libido. Is he doing things that are good for him? Is he happy in his job? Like, this could be just a little phase. I think it sounds like otherwise everything's really good. So stick with it. And I hope that it gets better. But I hear you. It's so frustrating. There's really not much that you can do. Because if it were reverse, we would all be saying, like, you should be grateful that she wants to sleep with you once a week. You know what I mean? So it's a hard situation. And I hear you. And feel free to DM me and we can commiserate to a certain degree. I'm going to do one more because we have time for one more.
So first off, congratulations on your baby boy. He is beautiful. And you look great already. Like, how? Give us the tea. But yes, my question is, I just got on the dating apps. I know that there's like an option to say if you have kids, but I have one child and I feel so stupid putting I have children when I just have one child. And when I read has children, that I immediately start thinking, like, how many kids does this person have? Even though I know that there's no option for has a child. Like, I don't feel okay putting that on my page. So I usually just introduce it into the first combo or the second combo, depending on the mood of the conversation. Do you think that that's wrong? Like, should I just have it up front? And though I don't have children, I have a child. All right. Thanks.
First of all, you're so sweet. Honestly, it's just angles. Like, you, if I were naked in front of you, you would still see that I've definitely had a baby recently. So you're very kind. In terms of this situation, I do agree with you. Having children is very different than having a child, but they don't have that option. If you want to leave it off, I think that's totally fine, but you have to be transparent about it in the first date because, you know, you want someone who can handle that. And that isn't nothing. Having one kid is still having a kid, and you want someone who's going to be man enough or woman enough, whatever it is, to be okay signing up for that. And so I think that it doesn't have to be straight up on your profile, but it should come up. And yeah, I agree with you though. Like, having children, when I see that, I would think that you have multiple children. You don't have to put it on your profile. And honestly, if anyone's listening that works at Hinge or another app, you should add the option of like have one child. I don't know, but I feel you. And that's really annoying and frustrating. But the right person for you will not only not mind that you have a child, but embrace the child as their own. So I'm manifesting that for you. And I'm really excited for you to hear this episode with Dr. McGrath. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. We just finally got our rugs and our couch cleaned, and I am in shock. It's a whole new world. If you've heard me talk about it before, we've had this incredible rug from Article. It's the Pearl Bovey blue rug. And we used to have it for our office. We changed the office into a nursery and it's blue. So it goes perfectly with Zachary's thing, his vibe, his whole feel. And now I can see the rug so bright, so blue again. And I've had this rug for a long time and it is really tried and true. We also have amazing lamps from Article. We use their hamper for all of his clothes, which we go through a lot of clothes over here. And I just love this company. I love their dressers. I've been looking at them because we might get another dresser for another room, and everything they have is incredible. The quality is amazing. It never goes bad. It never like rusts. It never breaks. And they're just incredible at like delivery and telling you what window. You're not waiting around. You're not waiting from the moment that you buy something to the time you actually get it. It's so quick. It's fast and affordable. And they have shipping across the US and Canada. And they have a great customer care team. And if you're just like, you have no idea what to do when it comes to interior design, their assortment is very curated. So you won't be struggling to find something great. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim this, you just visit article.com/acme and the discount will automatically be applied at checkout. That's article.com/acme for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. If you are a long-term listener of We Met at Acme, you know my morning routine by now. You've heard me talk about it so many times, and you know that I wouldn't be the person who, you know, goes to the bathroom or even is like nice without my AG1 in the morning. I started drinking AG1 daily about 2 years ago now, and it has truly changed the game for me. I try, emphasis on try, to eat vegetables, especially during this pregnancy, and it's just not really working. It kind of grosses me out beyond measure. But the taste of AG1 is something that I've craved since I started drinking it 2 years ago. I remember at first I was like, this is a weird taste. And then like it's very quickly like, oh, this is a taste that I need all the time. I don't know what it is, but if you drink AG1, you know what I'm talking about. It just tastes so good, especially when it's cold. I love to take a scoop of AG1 and mix it with cold water or some water with ice and then just stir with my metal straw. It's amazing. Every scoop includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support, magnesium and B vitamins for energy support, adaptogens to balance my body's stress levels, vitamin C and zinc to help support my immune health. I mean, you get it all. You get it all with one scoop. AG1 is a supplement that I trust to provide the support my body needs daily, and that's why they've been a partner for so long. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/acme. That's drinkag1.com/acme. Check it out. Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. I am so excited to be here with Dr. McGrath. He is the Chief Clinical Officer at NoCD. Hi.
Hello. Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. There's so much that we are going to discuss. So I guess we'll just get right into it.
All right.
What is OCD?
Well, OCD is two things. It is obsessions and compulsions. Obsessions are intrusive thoughts or images or urges that we might experience and believe to be bad, wrong, inappropriate, intrusive, and we do something to neutralize them because we think if we don't, it means that we like the thought or it could bring about some horrible, awful thing to occur. So a compulsion is the neutralization that we do. And that can be a behavioral thing, one that might be witnessed like a hand washing or straightening or something like that. But it could be a mental thing too. I might say a prayer over and over again until it's just right. Because if I don't, my higher power will reject it, and then I won't have done my prayers for the day, and then that's terrible, and then I will probably have committed a sin, and then I'll spend my afterlife in an eternity that I don't want, and all because I said a prayer wrong. So OCD doesn't care, let me just say about this, OCD doesn't care about anything that you love. In fact, it loves to attack the things that you love and you think are important. So many people will ask, why does it have to be this thing? And it's like, well, because that's the thing that's important to you. That's why.
Right, right. And who diagnoses you with OCD?
A medical professional, a therapy professional can diagnose people with obsessive compulsive disorder. So often licensed mental health professionals or medical professionals.
So let's say more about this hand washing thing, because I feel like post-COVID, a lot of people have this, like, I'm going to call it a hand washing tick because I'm not going to diagnose everyone with OCD, right? How do we know if we're hand washing to be mindful because let's say we have a new baby or we're, you know, around people at an event? Sure. Like, how do we know if we're doing it for quote unquote normal reasons versus the intrusive OCD reasons?
So first of all, we know the recommendations are a 20-second hand wash. So 20 seconds, great. OCD owns second 21 and on, right? If it tells you, well, more would be better, then now you're in the realm of OCD. Mm-hmm. Also, I don't mind if people will do a hand wash, which may sound weird coming from an OCD therapist, but yeah, I mean, we even changed the way we did therapy post-COVID. You know, we used to have people do lots of ERP. That's the kind of therapy we do, which I'm sure we will definitely get into, but we would purposely expose people to things and have them not wash their hands and learn that they can handle that. COVID did change some of that for us. So if it's not interfering in your life, it's not taking more than an hour of your day, okay. Right? All of us have quirky things that we do. So if you like to, when you come in from shopping, go wash your hands and it's not interfering in your life, it's not taking up a ton of time, that's fine. If you like to watch your garage door go all the way down and then stare at it for 5 seconds before you leave, okay. That's a quirky thing, right? That's something you do. It's not OCD. And one of the things that often happens that is disturbing for people with OCD is many people will say the phrase, well, I have a little OCD. Right. And I don't know any other mental health condition where we say, well, I have a little, you know, that kind of thing to the extent that we say it about OCD. So I would say we all have quirky things that we do. Right. So if you've had a new baby and you want everyone to wash their hands before they hold the baby, okay, fine. Would that have happened in 1970? No. Everyone was smoking cigarettes, carrying the baby in their arms, in the car, in the front seat without a seat
literally.
On. Yeah, literally. Uh-huh. That's how I was brought home from the hospital, actually. It was just like that. You know, so, you know, things change over time. We learn new things. We evaluate things. We add safety practices to life. OCD puts all of that on steroids and says, fine for everyone else to do this, but for you to be okay, you have to do this. And it's, fine, here we go, and all these other things that you have to add to it.
But what if that OCD, because you just said fine for everyone else to do it, what if that OCD actually makes you also want to control other people's behaviors? Like, for example, if you have this hand washing, we're just using this hand washing example, and then your spouse comes home and they don't immediately do that hand wash that you had done, right? Like, this sounds so ridiculous, but of course, this is like a real thing.
Happens all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, is that part of your OCD?
Yes.
That you're projecting onto someone else? And is that still called your own OCD? Or is there another name for that when you are also trying to control other how other people do things? Right.
That is part of your OCD. And it's really an attempt to control your environment. So if it's people, if it's where things are placed in the environment, how things are done, it's an attempt to try to bring safety into the world in anywhere that we possibly can. OCD wants a guarantee of safety. OCD wants a guarantee of no doubt, no uncertainty whatsoever. But it is nicknamed the doubting disorder, which means it will doubt everything and never have certainty the way that it wants to have it. So if you know, you and I were a couple and I came home and I saw you didn't wash your hands the way I did, I might say, hey, wash your hands. And then if you don't, and be like, no, I'm not, I didn't touch it. Yeah, but you have to, right? No. But and now we might be in an argument. And so OCD will go and cause all sorts of other problems as well, too, because we may no longer do things that we like or enjoy because of OCD. We might feel depressed because one of the definitions of depression is a loss of interest or pleasure in things we once enjoyed. In relationships, you might see you have two different ways of doing things. And it's not just maybe the love relationship of a spouse. It could be children as well, too. Everyone has to do what the OCD wants. And I've even seen this where I got a call once from a family and they said, our child can use one bathroom and we use the other bathroom. They won't let us use that other bathroom. And if we attempt to bring anybody over that's not in the family, they throw fits and they punch walls. And I said, so your child's running the household? And they're, no, it's my house. I run the house. I said, oh, well, if it's your household, go use the other bathroom. And they paused for a moment. They're like, yeah, you're right. I don't have control over my own house. OCD has control over my house. And so the goal is, how can we bring OCD back down to where it needs to be, just like a little bug under the shoe kind of thing, versus it's in control of everything.
Mm-hmm. And I want to, after we kind of do the initial address of OCD, I want to talk about the exposure therapy that you mentioned and kind of how we treat it. But another question that came in that I'm curious about really too is, what are the different types of OCD?
the tons. There's relationship OCD, where you have doubts about if we love each other enough or if we're right for each other. You have existential OCD, the philosopher's questions for thousands of years. I have to be the one that figures them out and address them, because how can I live in a world without knowing the answers to why we're here or various things of that. You could have real event OCD, where I remember doing this thing, but do I know that I remember it fully? And what if I did something that I don't remember that I did, and I could be found guilty or in trouble for it years and years later? Contamination OCD could be, I will get contaminated, but I could contaminate you as well too. So I have to do things to prevent myself from doing that to you. Harm OCD, where I could be harmed or I could hurt other people. One example might be, was that a pothole or did I run someone over? Maybe I should drive around the block just to see in case I did and there's a dead body in the street now and it's my fault. You may have sexual orientation OCD, which is not a dislike of another type of orientation. It's a, what if I'm not actually the orientation that I identify as and that I feel to my core? What if I'm actually something else and I've been living a lie and now I have to tell my friends and my family and my spouse that actually I'm not really this. I apologize for everybody for having faked you out for so long. Yeah. So you can see something like that. You will see scrupulosity, which is OCD about religion or morals. So what if I've offended a higher power in some way? I better do something to get back in the good graces of that. Or what if I violated a tenet of my religion somehow? I need assurance that I didn't do that, or that even if I did it, I've done the right amount of penance for it. Moral scrupulosity could be, what if I didn't do something right in society? What if, Lindsay, when you were following me, I didn't quite hold the door open enough for you and you bumped the door? Now, maybe I've injured your shoulder and maybe I should pay for the hospital for you just in case, you know, I did something that might not have been right from some kind of a societal issue. There's taboo topics in OCD like pedophilia. You know, when I was walking past that family in the mall and my arm moved slightly, did it mean that I was trying to steal their child from them and take it into the bathroom and molest that child and then bring it back and sneak it back into the carriage before the family realized that I had done such a thing, right? So maybe I'm a danger to people and especially to children if that's the case as well.
Yeah, wow. That's a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. Other than the pedophilia one and the more like dangerous, harming ones, some of the types sound a little bit like being introspective to me. And part of me is like, how do I know, right? The difference between like one of these OCDs, right? And anxiety or curiosity and just being somebody who is a curious, introspective person.
Nothing wrong with being curious or introspective, right? And those don't come with compulsions. Those don't come with behaviors or mental acts to neutralize what it was that you were just being curious about or introspecting. So if I'm thinking about things and I can accept, yeah, that's really interesting, and I can move on and live my life and have my day, that's great. We do overuse the word obsessed, right? You might love dinosaurs and you might just be obsessed, quote unquote, with dinosaurs, but you're doing no compulsions to neutralize it. And it's probably not interfering in your day. You're still going to work and you're still with your family, but in times that you have free, you're researching dinosaurs because you really, really love dinosaurs and they're really fun. Versus the research I'm doing is never enough. And I'm constantly trying to see, is there another newspaper article out there about the fact that there was a hit and run? And did it describe the car? And maybe I just didn't look at all the newspapers. And I'm keep doing it because there's not enough that I can find to reassure me that I'm going to be okay and that I'm not going to be in trouble. So there's really that difference that you have, because now they've added a compulsion to that experience.
If I thought my time was limited before, it's a whole new world, guys, after you have a baby. I have like 5 seconds to cook a meal. Really though, like 2 minutes, which is why I'm so excited that Factor is now working with our podcast. They make it so easy to eat better. Every meal of Factor's is fresh, never frozen, chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to go in literally 2 minutes. They have over 35 different options to choose from every week. So if you're a little on the picky side, not to worry, they will definitely have something that you will love. They have pancakes, smoothies, all kinds of things for breakfast. They have midday bites and they have dinners. And They're ready to heat and eat. So you don't have to prep, no cooking, no cleanup. And that's the last thing you want to do if you have a newborn is clean up, right? Or if you're just a busy person running around, because now that it's getting nicer out, we're all running around. It's like all of a sudden New York City woke up and everyone is on the streets. So no one has time to be spending hours cooking a really annoying meal, and you can have the same deliciousness with Factor. So head to factormeals.com/acme50 and use code acme50 to get 50% off. That is an insane deal. That's code acme50 at factormeals.com/acme50 to get 50% off. If you've been hearing about Factor meals, now is your time to try. Really, this weather, though, has been a 10 out of 10, and it's a perfect excuse to get my butt up and start being active again, especially postpartum. And I want to do things like I want to go upstate and I want to hike and I want to maybe I'll even go on a jog on the West Side Highway. Who knows? But the best motivation for me is to have really cute activewear clothing. Roback is an amazing brand, which I'm sure you've heard of. I'm sure you've seen their clothes all over, but I had never tried them before and I cannot take them off. Everything is so soft. I'm obsessed with their women's joggers. It's the perfect transition thing to wear because I'm obviously, you know, not fitting into my old jeans. They have great hoodie sets. If you're like in between jackets and sweaters, you don't know what to wear in this weather, the hoodies are perfect. And they're also good for a lazy day too. Like you don't have to be active to wear activewear, you know? They also have an active dress, which is pretty genius. So if you're on the go this summer and you don't want to be sweating, the fabric is really lightweight and breathable, perfect for on the move. So if you haven't already, it's time to try out some new Roback. Use the code ACME on roback.com for a generous 20% off your first order through the end of this week. So time is limited. You got to go now. That's spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K.com. That's 20% off all hoodies, joggers, crews, and more with code ACME. Stay comfortable this spring with Roback. I want to talk about ROCD, relationship OCD, because, you know, we're, of course, a dating and relationship podcast, and that comes up more than anything else. And the question that I get, and I am not really qualified to answer it in the way that you are, is how do I know if I have relationship OCD or this is just a bad relationship that isn't serving me? This is my gut and my intuition trying to tell me this versus like a real relationship OCD.
First of all, I will disappoint you. I cannot give you 100% answer on that because A, OCD will never accept any answer as being 100% anyway. So if you have relationship OCD and you were hoping this guy's going to finally give me the answer and there's going to be this aha moment, it's not going to happen. And but that goes with any type of OCD. Never have I spoken to anyone with any kind of OCD and given them an answer and they've gone, oh, thanks. Okay, OCD's gone now. That's awesome. Because OCD doesn't just go away like that. It's you will never give it enough information for it to feel satisfied. So let me state that right off the bat. Now, in terms of relationship OCD, we would have obsessions about the relationship, intrusive thoughts about, do we love each other enough? Do we hold hands? Why do the neighbors seem to be more loving than we are? And those types of things. Or I've even seen it. There's a certain religious faith that holds that you're married even after you die. And I've been asked the question, what if in 10,000 years from now, we're not as attracted to each other as we are today? Right. So it can go out to that kind of level as well for people. And what you will find then is that if there is a relationship issue and you go to your partner and you ask them a question, they will give you an answer and it might feel good for a moment. And then you'll ask the question again, but are you sure? Well, what about this? Right. And you'll keep kind of going over and over this thing. And then what happens in relationships? Well, boy, this is really getting annoying that you keep asking me this all the time. I'm going to start kind of avoiding you a little bit because I don't want to have this conversation all the time. Oh no, now they're avoiding me. What does that mean about it? Oh my gosh, maybe I should hound them or not. Why are you avoiding me? So what kind of thing? So people with relationship OCD are going to do things that unfortunately are going to actually interfere in their relationship. out of the quest of trying to find that answer that their OCD tells them is there that really isn't attainable. If it's okay with you, let me take it outside of relationship OCD just to give you an example. I wash my hands, I'm going to go back to your hand washing example. If I wash my hands and it feels good at 20 seconds, but great at 40 and wonderful at 60, and it's ecstatic at 5 minutes, what I'm going to do over time is I'm going to wash the oils off of my hands. And in doing that, my hands are going to get dry and they're going to crack and peel. And I'm going to touch things. I'm going to look at my hands and go, oh my gosh, my hands, they're so cracked and peeled. I better go wash them because now, look, germs could really get in there. The very thing that I did to feel good, wash my hands, became the thing that put me in more danger. My hands are now cracked and peeled because of all the hand washing that I've done. So in this situation with relationships, I think you'd find something kind of similar. The thing that I'm doing to try to alleviate this obsession, right, to try to get this answer that OCD tells me is available, quote unquote, is not available, but tells me that it is available, is the thing that's probably now putting a wedge into my relationship and leading me to believe even more and more that we're not as happy as we could be. And so what am I going to do? I'm going to double down on OCD because OCD tells me it's the way to get the answers to the relationship issues that are going on.
So would you say that someone with relationship OCD, obviously, of course, there's, you know, therapy to help it, but at like the baseline, would just need to kind of be like okay in the unknown, like okay in the, like, you know, you never really know, but that is uncomfortable for someone who has the compulsion.
100%, right? In religious scrupulosity, if you want a guarantee from me that you're going to have the afterlife that you want, there's nobody that can promise you that. There's plenty of people who will tell you, yes, yes, you're a wonderfully pious person. Your OCD will be like, yeah, but do they really know? Maybe you should check with another person. And then someone down the line is going to say to you, I don't know. What do you know that's different than everybody else? Why did you say you don't know, right? And that kind of thing. And a similar thing, again, happening in relationship OCD. You can ask your partner. You can ask all of your friends. You can describe things to people. All you need is one person to even slightly hesitate in the answer. And your OCD is going to go, wait a minute, they didn't answer really quick there. Maybe they were thinking about something. Maybe they know something that I don't know. Oh my gosh, what is it? Oh, shoot, here we go. And now I've got to go through this whole thing again and again and again and again and again, right? It's just overwhelming.
Some people say that they have mild OCD. And we kind of touched on this before, a little OCD, right? Would you say that's the same thing as people saying that they have mild OCD? Like, is that them saying, I have it sometimes, but I'm in control of it a lot of the time?
Yeah, I mean, I would say you either have it or you don't have it. You may have it in remission, right? It's still there. And now and then it might pop its head up or something like that. But, you know, it's a slippery slope on that, you know, oh, I have a little OCD kind of experience.
So how do we get our OCD, our OCD, whatever type of OCD we have, to go into remission? I know that's where you come in.
Yeah, it is where I try to come in, by getting people to accept the fact that we have really noisy brains and weird thoughts pop into our head all the time. Lindsay, I'll ask you a question. You can, you know, have you ever driven over a bridge and at the top of the bridge thought, I could totally turn the wheel of the car right now and shoot the car off the bridge?
So I've thought that this could happen, but not that I could do it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, Yeah. Did that mean that you became
a
bridges? Because now that you've thought about the fact that it could happen?
No.
Okay. If you had OCD, you might start avoiding bridges. Because now there's this concept called thought action fusion. Thoughts are as bad as actions. Thinking something, having an image something, having an urge about something is just as bad as doing that thing. And so now we start to go down this very slippery slope of, I should not think things. I should not have certain things ever pop into my head. Now, I know we've just met, but I promise if you and I ever meet in person and we're on a staircase together, I will think about throwing you down the stairs. And I'm going to tell you why. I've treated so many people with OCD who have a harm type of OCD who are afraid of, what if I'm on a staircase and I push people or I fall and then I cause other people to fall and then there's this cascading effect and people are crushed and harmed and all these things. Maybe I should never take stairs when there's people on them. I could only do it if there's no one else on the staircase. I have stood on so many stairs with people, with them behind me, with their hands on my shoulders, telling them to push me as hard as they can to actually see if they'll do it. No one's ever done it, but they're afraid of, what if I were to do it? And I can tell you this, Lindsay, I've done it so many times that I myself now can no longer take stairs without thinking, I could totally push everybody down these stairs. That thought is with me whenever I'm on a stair with people. I've never done it. I've never actually gone and pushed people. So,
but does that mean that you have OCD? Like, are you, you know, in remission? It's just because you've, you know, helped so many people that thought.
We all have weird thoughts.
Right.
If we called a thought like that OCD, then everyone in the world has obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm. That's the case. Mm-hmm. I do know compulsions. I don't need to because I recognize that thought is just, oh yeah, there's that thought. Okay, whatever. And then I take the stairs and I'm around people and it's there. So without doing any kind of compulsions to neutralize it and with my ability to recognize it, oh yeah, there's that funny thought again, and move on, it's not obsessive compulsive disorder.
That's so interesting. Like, because the first thing that comes to mind for me when you say that is meditation. Because meditation, you're observing thoughts as they come about and kind of putting them to the side. So I'd imagine that someone who has OCD could not even do, like, could not meditate. Is that, do you think that that's true?
It's difficult at first for them, especially about the thing that they're afraid of, right? If that thought pops into their head, they want to neutralize it right away. So there's almost this belief that all other thoughts are fine. They're okay. I can handle any of, but this one needs special attention. This one needs to be dealt with in an entirely different way than any of the other thoughts that I ever have in my life. And when you do that, I call it specialness. The rules of the world apply to me differently about this thing than they do about everybody else, right? When you approach it that way, now you've given this thought a special meaning, a special place, and you have to handle this one differently than anything else. But a thought is a thought. We may get cut off in traffic and think initially, I'm going to ram my car into you, right? Well, it doesn't mean you do it. Right? It doesn't at all mean you do any of those types of things. And people will laugh, listen to this. This guy's really violent. I mean, he's talking about all these things, but I treat so many people who have harm fears all the time. And I go into situations like I've stood at a train track for 3 hours with somebody behind me telling them to push me into a train that's come by. I mean, because they were afraid, what if I push people onto a train track?
Right. And that's the exposure therapy, what you're describing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So we're purposely putting people into situations that are uncomfortable and having them learn that just because I have an obsession doesn't mean that I have to do anything about it whatsoever. I can allow myself to be in this situation. And yes, I can hear the obsession, but I don't have to believe it. I don't have to pay attention to it. It may be there. If you buy a clock that ticks really loud, you might want to take it back, or you might just over time not even hear it anymore when it's in your house. And then 3 months later, someone comes to visit and they say, man, that clock is really loud. And you're like, oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Yeah. That clock is like, you've been hearing the clock for the last 3 months, but you haven't paid any attention to it. Right. It's been in the background. It's always there. But you're not focused on, God, that clock, it just ticks and ticks and ticks. Why doesn't it ever stop, right? So you can get that way with your own thoughts as well, too. And that's where I come in with people, is helping them do that. And the best way to do that is to prevent people from doing compulsions, because we want people to learn that they can handle the short-term discomfort of the obsession instead of making that go away right away by doing a compulsion. You have to decide, do you want to feel good now? You do a compulsion. Do you want to feel good later? You don't do a compulsion, and you allow yourself to learn that you can handle the discomfort.
And how do you do exposure therapy for relationship OCD? Because it's a little different than like putting someone in a physical situation and saying, you know, push me, I don't think you will.
Right. Well, don't avoid going out on dates. I can only go out with you if I'm feeling a certain way about the relationship or the date or anything. Well, go out anyway. I don't want to hold hands unless it's genuine, you know, because if it's forced, does that mean we really like each other? Hold hands. Just do those kinds of things. The stuff that you're having doubts about, the stuff that OCD is maybe saying, well, you can't do this unless it's this or the reasons or this or something like that. Do those very things and pull the rug out from what OCD is telling you, and don't let it be the dictator of your relationship. Take control of it yourself and do the things that you used to do in relationships before OCD started meddling into them.
Right.
Because if it worked before, it'll work again. And you can get to a point where OCD can start fading into the background. It may still tell you all these things, but again, you don't have to believe them.
If you are listening to this episode and you are highly relating to a lot of the questions that I asked, You might have relationship OCD. If you feel like you have these doubts that feel overwhelming and no matter what, you cannot seem to work through them, you should absolutely check out NoCD. Dr. McGrath is a perfect example of an amazing, amazing therapist that you could find if you check out NoCD. They provide effective, affordable, and convenient virtual OCD therapy that can help you feel more secure in your relationship and help in other areas of your life too, because you heard today that it affects a lot of areas of your life, not just your relationship. You can do live face-to-face video sessions with a licensed therapist like Dr. McGrath, who is trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, the gold standard treatment for OCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans to make treatment more affordable. To learn more about therapy with NoCD, go to NoCD.com and schedule a free 15-minute call with their team. That's NoCD.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call. I'm telling you, this is something that you don't want to have to live with. You want to put it in remission. You want to go to NOCD.com. You want to schedule that call and you want to see if this is something that you genuinely have and not just something that you think you might have, because you should take control over your life. Back to the episode. How can we support a partner who has relationship OCD and not take it personally when we have to tell them, no, I do think we're a good match. No, you should definitely stay. No, you shouldn't make a pros cons list about how you feel about me. I think we should just be happy, you know, before it makes you like lose your mind.
What I call the worry book, where you can put a notebook on the dining room table. And if you're the partner and the person with relationship OCD asks you a question about the relationship more than once, you can go to the book, you can write down the question, you can write down the answer. And going forward, all you ever say is, well, that one's in the book. We don't discuss that anymore. That's so good. So that's been really helpful to stop the incessant overgoing of conversations. Now, you might say, well, doesn't the person with those, isn't that like reassurance for the person with OCD? No, they've memorized what's in the book. They don't need to ever go back and look at the book. They know what's in the book. OCD wants to have conversations over and over again because it's hoping maybe today you'll give a slightly different answer than you did the last 78 times. And if that's the case, maybe you've changed your mind. Now we need 90 more hours to talk about it.
So interesting. I feel like, you know, just listening to this, I'm a new parent and my husband is as well, of course. And we are navigating this like new stage. And I'm not going to say that he has OCD because, of course, I'm not, you know, qualified to, but he definitely has some anxiety around having a newborn, which I imagine is normal.
Sure.
And I, first of all, definitely going to do that book trick with him about like questions like, is he breathing? I'm like, well, you asked me that yesterday. But it is really interesting of like how to support him, but also kind of valid, like, just make him feel like he's heard, but that it's an unnecessary, like what I've been saying to him, I'm like, you're in the uh-ohs, like you're uh-ohing a lot.
Yeah.
Because like, that's what I'm hearing. It's like, we're like doing a fun activity and he's like, oh, what if he just touched an animal in the park? Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's what if, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, think of all the farmers whose children touch animals all the time. It's like they don't seem to be dying in droves, but
exactly.
But our child is special, potentially.
right.
You know, one of the things that I think is important, and it's important to discuss this in the context of relationships too, is that OCD loves a stressor. So getting married is a stressor. Having a baby is a stressor. Moving in with each other is a stressor. These would be times that you would see OCD try to rear its head because these are stressors. In terms of what you were talking about having a child, there's something called perinatal OCD. And it's not just a hormonal experience. It's a stressor experience. And this is why dads can have it too, right? Or moms of the opposite partner who birthed the child could have it as well, if you know, depending on the relationships that you're in. So you don't have to be the birth parent of a child. It's not purely a hormonal issue. It's a stressor issue. I've worked with other parents who were adamant that no one comes in our house, right? Because they'll bring germs in and it'll kill our child. And the birth parent is like, you need some help, because guess what? there's a family party this weekend, and we're bringing the kit, right? No, we're not yet. Oh, yes, we are. That kind of thing. So there's great treatments available for these types of things, and OCD will come in. I mean, I've treated so many people who think that they have to hide sharp objects because they can't have them around their child. One that I could talk about really significant, because she agreed, we wrote an article about her. I treated one woman who did not touch her child for the first 6 months of her child life out of fear of, what if while changing my child's diaper and wiping him, it's perceived as molesting him, because maybe I had a thought in my head that was not pure while I was wiping him, or maybe he seemed to enjoy it. And did that mean that I was enjoying pleasuring him? These were the intrusive thoughts that popped into her head. So I was there the day at 6 months, the first day she ever picked up her child and held her child with her in the office. And I was crying. It was so amazing to watch. But don't underestimate the power of OCD to really screw up anything in your life. And if you think OCD is just hand washing or I straighten pictures on the wall, you are sorely mistaken, because OCD will attack anything that's important to you.
So I guess you kind of answered my question, which was, if you already have OCD and then you have a child, does it get worse postpartum already have it? And I think what you said with the stressor, the stressor is having the child. So if a stressor occurs, it can get worse.
Yes. Now, are there hormonal issues with OCD? Absolutely, too. I mean, I work with many people around the time of their period report that their OCD is worse. So we know there's some cyclical and hormonal issues with OCD as well. So it can be that, but it can be the stressor, too.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of this book? It's called The Untethered Soul.
No.
I feel like I would love to know your thoughts on it. Okay. It's basically all about how we need to separate our mind is like not evil, but like it's our thoughts are not our friends. Like our thoughts are working for someone else sometimes. And we have to learn to separate ourselves from our thoughts and be more like in our feelings and doings and beings and all of that. And it's really interesting. I read it when I started therapy years ago, because the type of therapy I did was, I want to say CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy.
Sure.
And a therapist of mine recommended it. And so I read it and it was very eye-opening. And I don't know that I've actually, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say like I'm perfect, I've never had OCD, because you just never know, and knock on wood. But I feel like reading that and just being not hyper aware, because I feel like that goes into the obsessive territory, but aware about not, you know, believing every thought that comes into your head can help for that. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
does that sound helpful?
It would be interesting. I'll have to check it out. The Untethered Soul. Yeah. But I do like that we are just allowing people to think of thoughts. There's even acceptance and commitment therapy, another type of like thoughts are like leaves on a stream, right? There they are and there they go.
Right.
The observers of the experience. We don't have to grab everyone and say, oh, what does that one mean? And what does that one mean? And why is that one that color? And this one, we can allow for things to be. And for the most of the time, we do that. Even people with OCD, 99% of the time with whatever thoughts are there, do that. It's that 1% or less of thoughts that take up 90% of their day, right? Those are the things that they're all so focused on. And it's always funny when you have OCD, you're almost amazed that anybody else could do anything without OCD about that thing, right? Or when I was doing this in a hospital, I'd have an OCD group and we would all wait, because the new person would every week do this. Somebody would be talking and the new person would whisper to the person next to them, I wish I had that type of OCD, because that would be so easy to deal with. And everybody would just pause and laugh and say, yeah, we all said that when we joined here too, because everybody thinks their type is the worst. Right. And anything else would be easier to deal with. Well, guess what? It would be easier to deal with. You know why? Because you're not bothered by that thing. You don't care about hitting a pothole. So hearing someone talk about hit and run OCD, you're like, well, that's dumb. Why are you just drive? Right. But then I could say to you, okay, well then just don't wash your hands. Oh, I could never do that. I mean, no, you know, that kind of thing. So it is an idiosyncratic experience to you of what's going on, because to you, that thing feels real. And that's the thing I hear all the time from people with OCD. Why does it feel so real? Well, it has to, If it didn't, you don't need me, right? Hey, right. I have this, but it doesn't really feel real. Oh, well, great. Good luck. It's going to feel real. It's emotional. It's to the core of your kind of emotional being. And that's why it feels so real. And I'm here to help teach people. You can get easily tricked in your brain that just because you have this emotional thing going on doesn't actually mean you're in danger.
Another question that came up, and I almost like want to guess the answer, okay. is OCD hereditary? And I would say if you're exposed to a parent who is displaying OCD, you're more likely to get it because you see how, like, you know, it's like what you know, but I have no idea again. So you tell me.
Here's the interesting thing on heredity. There's a genetic component. We call this a diathesis stress model. We have a genetic component and we have a stressor. So if you have a parent with OCD, you go from a 1.2 to 2% chance of having OCD to about a 5 to 10% chance of having, even up to almost a 20% chance. On that one. Yeah. If you have an identical twin who has OCD, you've got about a 60 to 70% chance of having OCD. So we know there's genes there, but not everybody. So we know that there's the right stressors at the right time. And here's the interesting thing. If a parent has OCD, rarely do we see the child have the same subtype as the parent. So it's not necessarily just a modeling thing. It can play a role, but it's not usually 100% model that my mom was a hand washer, so I'm a hand washer too. That rarely actually happens.
Someone asked for tips for moving in with a messy partner if you are diagnosed OCD.
Well, if your OCD has nothing to do with messes, that's probably not going to bother you. So that's the first thing, right? It's not an automatic that a messy partner is going to be triggering to OCD. So I just want to state that. Now, if your OCD is about those things and straightening, I think that it requires some significant conversations before you move in with each other about where's the middle ground. Right. I'm not saying that the person with OCD has to acquiesce and live in a mess all the time, but the person without OCD doesn't have to live to the standards of OCD either. Let's find the middle ground and what we're going to agree that we're going to do. I'm going to work on my OCD in therapy, and I'm going to work on giving up some of these things and living in a certain way. But I need you to also do something to move toward that as well, too.
I feel like this one is such a good one to end on. What is the number one tip/advice for, we'll say, ROCD, because that's the one I think that's most relatable to people listening today?
Your partner will never meet the standards that OCD demands of them. I'm just going to throw that out there for everybody and let that sink in a little bit. The demandingness of OCD is unattainable. You know, not one person in the history of OCD, as far as we know, has ever done something enough for their OCD to say to them, oh, you finally attained everything I've wanted. Congratulations. I'm going to go away now. So it's not about satisfying OCD as a way to find the right partner. It's about taking OCD out of the relationship. It's the third wheel in the relationship and allowing for the relationship to grow and blossom and be there without the influence of OCD on it.
Wow. I feel like I just learned so much, Dr. McGrath. Thank you so much. This was incredible. I know that everyone's going to love this episode and really get so much from it as well. Where can everybody find you, and how can NoCD help everyone who is listening? Yeah.
So NoCD is an online platform for the treatment of obsessive compulsive and related disorders. We work also with tics and BFRBs like trichotillomania, which is hair pulling, or skin picking, which is excoriation. We treat hoarding as well too. And we use a combination of exposure and response prevention or habit reversal treatments and CBT for those various conditions, ERP being the gold standard of treatment for OCD. If you want to get a hold of us, you can go to nocd.com. We have therapists in all 50 states, as well as in Canada and Australia and the UK. And we do take insurance here in the US as well, too, which is really helpful. And so please feel free to reach out to us. If you also are interested, maybe you know someone or you have a partner who has OCD or you want to know about it, we do what we call a NoCD 411 session as well, too, where we can be available for an hour to you to just answer questions about OCD and how it might be manifesting, and for you to really talk to an expert about it as well, too. So that might also be helpful, too. And if you're interested, I've got a little bit of some books on OCD. It's called the OCD Answer Book. Although it's funny, now that we're talking about this, when I wrote that, and here's the interesting thing about OCD. when I wrote that, relationship OCD wasn't really a thing back then. Mm. You know, we hadn't really recognized that as a subtype as of yet. So it'd be interesting if we do a second edition of it. I would modify some of my answers that are in there.
Totally. Oh my God, today. You got to write it. People will run and flock to buy that book, I'm telling you. I would buy it.
There's also some really good books out there about living with someone who has OCD as well too. So you can check those out. If you just do a search on living with OCD or someone with OCD, there's Amy Maraskin has one out. John Hirschfield has one out. There's ones for families as well too, mm-hmm. that are really, really nice. So there's that. And you know, I'd love to come back if you want to talk more about like the perinatal OCD or the things with babies and kids, you know.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Just let me know.
Big topic that we should totally get into. Thank you so much, Dr. McGrath. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.